This week's episode is for the bourbon enthusiasts. Today, I have as my guest the whiskey professor, Bernie Lubbers, Heaven Hill Distillery's national brand ambassador. If you want to learn more about bourbon and one of America's oldest and best distilleries, stick around. This episode's for you. This is Chris Spear, and you're listening to Chefs Without Restaurants, the show where I speak with culinary entrepreneurs and people working in the food and beverage industry outside of a traditional restaurant setting. I have 31 years of working in kitchens, but not restaurants, and operate a personal chef service throwing dinner parties in the Washington, D.C. area. Before we get started here, I want to be transparent about something. If you listened to last week's show, you might know that Heaven Hill Distillery's Bottled in Bond is a current sponsor of this show. But being a sponsor does not guarantee you a guest spot on the show. In fact, it's a rarity here. I wouldn't have anyone on the show who I didn't think would be entertaining and provide value to my listeners. Bourbon was the first spirit I ever tried, and I've had many products from the Heaven Hill line in my liquor cabinet over the years. I was genuinely excited to have Bernie as a guest on this podcast. Okay, I wanted the show to be a little primer on bourbon. Like many food and beverage products, there are regulated specifications as to what can be called bourbon. On top of that, there's another classification, which is bottled in bond. What does that even mean? Bottled in bond goes even further than what bourbon is, and Bernie's one of the champions of bottled in bond. So, obviously, we're going to talk about that today. But we also get into things like whiskey tastings and tasting notes in general. I asked him about the price of bottles, especially as it relates to the quality of the spirit. And I feel like it can be overwhelming when you go into the liquor store and see 200 different bottles of bourbon. Where do you even start? Do you even know who's making those bourbons? Something I found really interesting was how the bourbons differ and have different names, even though they have the same mash bill. What's the difference between Evan Williams, Heaven Hill, and Henry McKenna bottled and bond bourbons? If you want to know, Bernie breaks it down for you. He also gives a great guide on how to do your own tasting at home and compare them to kind of gauge what you might like. I hope you enjoy listening to this conversation and that you maybe learn a thing or two about bourbon. And besides what you hear in the podcast, Bernie has a book out called Bourbon Whiskey, Our Native Spirit. Pick it up to learn more. As always, thanks so much for listening and have a great week.
As a lifelong bourbon enthusiast, I've always been captivated by its rich complexity and fascinated by its history. Bourbon was the first spirit I'd tried when I was old enough to drink. I only wish I'd started with the good stuff. That's why I'm excited to introduce you to Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond. Born from the Shapira family's unwavering passion since 1935, this bourbon's a testament to quality and tradition. Heaven Hill Distillery goes beyond the Bottled in Bond Act of 1897, aging this bourbon for 7 years, three more than required, creating a richer, more sophisticated flavor profile. When you select this premium bottled in bond bourbon, you're also ensured that you're getting a bourbon that's been made in a single distillation season and that it's been bottled at exactly 100 proof. This commitment to excellence is evident in every sip. But don't just take my word for it. Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond won the double gold at the 2023 World Spirits Competition in San Francisco, New York, and Singapore, as well as the 2023 Triple Still Award from the Tasting Alliance. Discover the award-winning Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond for yourself. Whether you enjoy it neat, on the rocks, or as the cornerstone of a cocktail, it's a bourbon that stands apart. Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond delivers a flavor profile that's unmatched. Available nationally at your local retailer. Embrace the premium quality that Heaven Hill Bottled in Bond brings to every sip. Heaven Hill reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Hey Bernie, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
I'm excited to talk to you. You are the whiskey professor, as you're known in some circles.
Yeah, I'm a self-proclaimed whiskey professor. That's kind of the title that we landed on when I first started in the industry, because, you know, there's a lot of people that were ambassadors and all that kind of stuff and different things. So we came up with that and it's kind of stuck. And I'm kind of one of the last ones in the American whiskey business anyway.
And that was in the early 2000s you started, like 2005?
Yeah, January 2005. I started back when there was only 10 distilleries in Kentucky.
How did you get involved in that? Were you someone who had been in the spirits industry, or were you just a recreational cocktail guy?
Well, I got into it probably the most natural way. I was a touring stand-up comedian.
Right? Oh, that's interesting.
So a couple things happened. I did a routine in my act that I was my closing bit, about my 94-year-old dad who drank a quart of bourbon a day. And it was about a 10-15 minute bit. It was kind of my signature piece. And every time I had a bourbon and toasted to my dad at the end and have everybody in the crowd. So a company heard that I did that and started inviting me. That was Jim Beam. And they started inviting me to different things, tastings and different things around Derby and different times. And I guess that was kind of a soft, rehearsal, I guess, for when they... The head office said, we need somebody to represent the brands in the state of Kentucky. They asked me to interview for it. So being a stand-up comic, I can stand up in front of a crowd and talk whether I know what the hell I'm talking about or not. And I'm kind of a quick study. And I grew up in Kentucky, so I had the pedigree. And my dad drank a quart of bourbon a day. So I knew probably more than most people back in 2005 sitting in a room, you know, tasting. And then, of course, I had people like Fred Noe and Jerry Dalton at Jim Beam to, you know, learn from. And so that's how I got into it.
So you were an influencer 20 years before that was a real thing, right? Because isn't that it now? Everyone just recreationally posts things on the internet and then they get job offers. But it sounds like you were the original influencer, definitely the original whiskey influencer going back 20 years now then.
Yeah, I'll take that. That sounds fair.
So you've been with Heaven Hill since 2012. What was it about Heaven Hill that made you move on over there? And you've now been with them for, 12 years.
Well, you know, I'm still friends with all the people over at Jim Beam and everything. But, you know, you got to look out for yourself sometimes. And I wasn't looking for a job, but Heaven Hill happened to need. They were adding to their Whiskey Ambassador program. Their ambassador was moving on. I had worked with him at Jim Beam. He had become the ambassador over at Heaven Hill. He was moving on to another position and suggested they talk to me. And we talked and it was something of, you know, it's a family-owned company. That was attractive to me. And the fact that it was, they had these cool old labels and a lot of them were bottled and bond. And I had already established myself as kind of being the bottle and bond guy back in 2006 or so. So that was attractive to me. And They lured me away.
Well, you mentioned Bottle and Bond. I want to quick pause there because before we get into that, I think it's important to talk about what bourbon whiskey actually is. I'm sure many of my listeners know, but there are some technical rules that need to be adhered to. So can you give us a very brief primer what makes an actual bourbon whiskey?
Yeah, well, I happen to have a copy of the standards of identity right in front of me. I was taught that by Jerry Dalton, who was the master distiller at Jim Beam. And when I came over to Heaven Hill, I showed Parker Beam that I carried these around. He thought that was really cool. And I keep them with me all the time. And it's bourbon's not a long definition. It's pretty quick and easy. But bourbon whiskey also shares a definition with rye whiskey and wheat whiskey and malt whiskey and rye malt whiskey. But it's whiskey produced no more than 160 proof off the still from a fermented mash. It's not less than 51% corn. So you have to be the majority corn. If you're going to be a rye whiskey, must be a majority grain rye, etc. And then it must be stored at not more than 125 proof in charred new oak. So there's those restrictions of off the still and then in the barrel. And the type of barrel, which is new charred oak containers, and also and that's basically the definition of bourbon.
So there's no standards for where it can be made. Like I can be making bourbon here in Maryland. It doesn't have to be a Kentucky thing or anything like that.
Correct. That's a separate declaration in 1964, where Congress declared unanimously. That's hard to do anymore, that bourbon must be a distinctive product of the United States. So you can produce it anywhere in the United States. Yes, that does include Puerto Rico, and I'm guessing, and Guam, and Hawaii, and Alaska. People unbelievably ask me that. I'm like, well, gosh, that's not even a question, right? So these are laws. So these are, you can interpret them, and you can argue them. If you want, but it's pretty clear that it must be made in the United States, but 90% of it's still made in the Commonwealth of Kentucky.
Yeah, I had the fortune of visiting Kentucky for the first time ever last summer, and I was only there for 2 days, and I had the whole family in tow, so I didn't make it to as many places as I would have liked. So in my hopefully near future, I will be back and tour many more of those places. But, you know, it's so different because here in Maryland, we have distilleries and you go in for a tour and it's just like a factory warehouse kind of thing with, like, you know, a couple stills, nothing to look at. And then you get down to Kentucky and there's, you know, huge plots of land and these giant barrel houses and everything. And it's so much more impressive. That's definitely a distillery tour. If you've never been to Kentucky and been to an actual distillery down there, I recommend it to anyone who's in the area.
Well, please do come by. And, you know, there's one reason for that is because out of from Prohibition to today. So when Prohibition was over in 1933, you know, I had to start back up. There was only six companies that were allowed to stay open for medicinal purpose during Prohibition. So from Prohibition till today, Maryland distilling got kind of wiped out. New York distilling kind of got wiped out. The major producers that were left were in Kentucky for the most part. There was one in Virginia. And it's just because we've had it here the longest, but we were decimated too. So there's only 10 distilleries owned by six companies that were around in 2005 when I started. And I call those legacy distilleries, because if it wasn't for the six of us, there would not be the now 100 distilleries in Kentucky and 2,600 outside of Kentucky. So that's pretty mind-boggling.
So you had mentioned Bottled in Bond. Let's go back to what Bottled in Bond is, because I feel like that's something that you don't see as much, or at least hear people talking about. And you are one of the people who I think is credited with kind of championing Bottled in Bond.
Yeah, well, I've always kind of made it my thing. You know, that's, you know, I realized early on I was one of the few ambassadors that were in the American whiskey business, and everybody who was around me that was an ambassador was either a Beam family member, or a, you know, like a Jimmy Russell, Eddie Russell family member, was a, you know, or a master distiller. And I wasn't those things. So I was looking for something that I could embrace. And at the time, one of my very first bourbons that I ever found, it was my favorite bourbon, said the word bonded right across the top of it. And when I came home, this was in the late 80s, I came home and I told my dad, I said, "Hey man, I found this great bourbon." And it's Bottled in Bond. He goes, "Oh, Bottled in Bond, that's the good stuff." And I went, "What?" Now that hits your ears, right? I wasn't in the industry, but that, as a Kentuckian and as somebody who was getting more into bourbon, "What do you mean the good stuff?" And he says, "Well, it's supervised by the United States government. It's 100 proof," he'd say. And then that was about as far as he got, you know, but he knew that was something. So when I got in the industry, I wanted to make it, you know, my thing. You know, I saw recently a talk. It was at our national sales meeting. We had a keynote speaker and he said, what are you famous for?" And that was a challenge. Like, if you're going to be in, you know, representing something, what are you famous for? And I started looking on social media and seeing all these people that were famous. They became famous because they love something. And I went, "Wow, I guess that's something I did kind of unconsciously back then in 2005 and six. But I wanted to be famous for, famous is a big word, you know, it's a small pond, but I want to be out. That's, I want to be the Bottled in Bond guy. And so I wanted to, because there were so few Bottled in Bonds compared to how many labels that were available back then and still are today.
So what does Bottled in Bond mean?
You know, there's words on labels that mean things. That's what Jerry Dalton taught me back in the day. And those words are Kentucky straight bourbon whiskey. And I read you the bourbon law. There's also restrictions and laws on just what whiskey is. Whiskey must be made from grains. Not from fruits, not from molasses, right? From grains. So you have these different restrictions. And I talk about those words on labels like Kentucky straight bourbon whiskey as military men and women earning medals. You have to earn that medal. And it is restriction. Not everybody in your unit has that distinction, right? So we're whiskey, and then we're bourbon whiskey. And then we're from Kentucky. That's another medal, because we have the institutional knowledge here. We have the limestone water, which was more important probably 100 years ago, but it's still pretty important. We also have the four different seasons really hot summers, really cold winters. We have long springs and falls, which helps that aging and that whiskey going in and out of those barrels. So there is an advantage to Kentucky compared to North Dakota and Florida on that. Not that it might be better, but it will be different, right? And then we have the word straight, which means it must be aged for a minimum of 2 years in those brand new charred barrels. So those are each individual metals. Then you have bottled and bond, which is, that makes bourbon and rye whiskey and all those, some of the most restricted whiskeys, spirits on planet Earth, right? So there's a lot of restrictions. Then on top of it, you got bottled and bond. Bottle and bond, you must pass all those, you must get all those medals for bourbon, but then you must follow all these, which is distilled in the same distillery. It must be from the same spirit, from the same class of materials, so the kind of grains, you know, the corn and all that stuff, the same distilling season. Now we're down to a season, we're down to a 6 month period. There's only two distilling seasons, spring and fall, January through June, July through December. Then you must be stored for not just 2 years like straight whiskey, but 4 years, a minimum of 4 years, so double the age. Then it must be stored in a government bonded warehouse, reduced in proof by pure water only. So imagine this sounds like common sense today. This was passed in 1897. Pure water only to exactly 100 degrees of proof. It must bear the real name of the distillery so you know who made it. It also must put on the unique distilled spirits plant number that the government assigns us. So look at all those restrictions. So I call bottle and bond the green beret of spirits. It has all the metals, right? But that knocks you into the special forces, if you will, special services because of all that. And thus that makes bottle and bond the most restricted spirits on planet Earth.
Wow, I never thought of it that way.
Yeah, and because they're so hard to achieve those, they're also, Chris, the rarest spirits on planet Earth. And what does everybody want right now in bourbon world?
The rare bottles.
And it's just a different definition because why does rare have to mean only three and I got to pay $3,000 each for them? You know, that's... Rare can also mean there's not many of them. That's kind of what rare means. So bottle and bond can be rare, but also available every day. And that's kind of what we have at Heaven Hill. A couple other distilleries have one or two. We have 10. And we have a bottle and bond with our Heaven Hill bottle and bond that's not only available every day, but it's even rarer than the bottle and bond because it has a whopping 7-year age statement. Right now, there's 2,700 distilleries, 100 in Kentucky, 2,600 outside of Kentucky. Let's say all of them make four labels each. I mean, even smaller distilleries have three or four labels. Let's just say four each. That means there's over 10,000 labels of American whiskey on bourbon and American whiskey on the landscape. Of the 10,000 labels, there's only around 100 that have achieved the designation of bottle and bond. It's that hard. That's rare right there. Then, bottle and bond has to be a minimum of 4 years old. How many are over 4 years old?
10.
I think that's high.
Sure.
Yeah. I think, you know, we've got our Heaven Hill, which is a 7-year bottle and bond. We have Henry McKenna, which is a 10-year-old bottle and bond. We have the Old Fitzgerald Decanter Series, which is 8 years to 19 years. Right now, I've only mentioned Heaven Hill products, by the way. So we dominate that landscape. There might be one or two other distilleries that put, maybe three, that put an age statement over 4 years old. So they're the rarest of the rare.
So with this Heaven Hill bottled in bond, like, how do you decide 7 years? You know, it has to be four. Did they do a five? Did they do a six? Did they do a seven? Have they tried an eight? Do you know? Like, how do you just decide that it's going to go for 7 years?
That's a great question. We've had bottle and bonds. Of course, we have many that are 4 years old. We've had 6 years old. We've had 8 year old. We've had 10 years old. We've had older than that. We've had all the way up to 24 year old in a Parker's collection. On that, it becomes a taste profile. And with bottle and bond, you are within a 6 month period because of the distilling season. So you find, we have our sensory team and our tasting panels, and we find where the sweet spot is, what we know that customers are kind of looking for. Some of that's project, you know, guessing. But that's the fun part. And so we found that this 7 year was a nice sweet spot.
So talking about the sensory experience, how would you describe the flavor profile in general of like a well-aged bourbon? Like if someone is new to this, how would you describe a really good bourbon? And then kind of looking at specifically the Heaven Hill bottled and bond product, what are the tasting notes of that?
Well, here's my universal telling everyone not to be intimidated by tasting notes, because if you throw tasting notes out and then Chris, you don't find it in there, there must be something wrong with you, right? So what's so that's not it at all. You know, where Parker Beam, he never talked about it in tasting notes. He would just say, well, I taste good bourbon, you know, and that meant there were no flaws in there that was negative, that it had only positive things. But the way I describe it is you have three grains that are in the raw product. You got corn and barley, which are sweet grains. And then you have the rye, which is a spicy grain. Think of rye bread. Yeah. Think of cornbread. Yeah. So sweet and spice. And then from the barrel aging, you get basically three tasting notes of vanilla. There's six different vanillins in a barrel. When we char the inside of the barrel, it brings the natural sap and the sugars from that wood up to the edge of that barrel. And that's where a lot of that red line, it's called a red line. And that's where the whiskey goes in and out of that picks up the color and the flavor. And that is vanilla, honey, and caramel. Then, of course, if it's over 6 years or so, I'm going by the old timers telling me this that have been with the distillery for 30, 40 years, says it takes six good years to get really... think of a new barrel as a magnifier of flavors. So you magnify those vanilla, honey, and caramels. But after 6 years, you get some oak influence. You're really going to taste some of the wood. But we don't want it to taste like a dirty old stick, as our master distiller, Connor O'Driscoll, will say. Don't want that. So that's what you're going to taste. Vanilla, honey, and caramel, sweetness, and spice. Then everything else in the middle. That's your building blocks of a tasting. But the mortar, all the mortar in between that holds it together, is your individual experience from your mom's cooking, from your school lunches, to your dad's grilling out, to your grandparents' holiday meals, to the smells and tastes of your childhood and adulthood. That's all in there. And that's what makes bourbon so much fun and intergenerational, is you can now have your own personal tasting profile that happens. And with a 7 year on the bottle and bond of Heaven Hill, it's in that great sweet spot of 7 years. So it's over 6 years to get that magnification and then those augmented flavors. And then some of that oak influence in there too.
I do find that the tasting notes thing can be overwhelming. And like you said, I don't know, self-reflectively, like disappointing. I took an enology course in culinary school for wine, you know, and we'd be in class with 30 people and you try this thing and the teacher wants you to shout out what it tastes like and tobacco and, you know, whatever, molasses, all this. I'm like, I don't get that. Am I wrong? Like, I'm not getting blackberry in this wine at all. Like, am I supposed to? So similarly with the whiskey thing, you know, you go on a website, there's a new bottle you maybe want to try, and every website has their opinions and ratings and reviews, and you see all the tasting notes and then people arguing in the comments about, like, I didn't get the caramel notes in this, but I got more, like, burnt wood. And it's like, I don't know, should I buy this whiskey or not?
Yeah, I mean, we all like to throw tasting notes out. But again, like you said, what if it's, I've never smoked, so I don't get tobacco, right? I mean, I've smoked a you know, I've smoked a Swisher Sweet on the golf course before and things like that. And I've smoked probably three cigarettes in my life. I just never get that. So I don't get some of those flavors that people who have smoked or enjoy cigars. I've smoked several cigars in my life, but it's not a regular thing for me. But that doesn't mean that they're not tasting it. And that's okay. But that's their experience. And so the best way to do it is, of course, why we do tastings and whiskey festivals and bourbon festivals is so that people can come up to the tables and talk to us. And then when you, then you can go, and when you go to your local bourbon bar, you can get a 1 ounce pour or 2 ounce pour of it, give it a chance, and then go and buy it. You know, there's ways to not have to go buy a whole bottle before you taste it and sample it. There's great ways to do it, more fun ways to do it.
How many bourbons do you think you've tried in your lifetime? Do you have any idea? Do you keep track of things you've tried?
Oh, no. Oh, no. I'm sure it's thousands, you know, on the innovation team. Yeah. You know, do you count every barrel we've done a private barrel pick with liquor stores and retailers and bars? And each barrel's different. So you got to count that as a different, if it's an Elijah Craig barrel, I've tasted hundreds of barrels of just of that one brand, you know. So it's thousands, it's a lot of fun. You know, here's the cool thing. All bourbon basically is corn, barley, and rye. A handful have wheat. So what does it matter? You know, it's age and proof tell what brands it is. Some distilleries house style includes making a specific bourbon a specific way, and they actually put the name of the bourbon on the barrel. At Heaven Hill, our house style is to make a style of whiskey. So that would be bourbon whiskey, our 78% corn, 12% malted barley, 10% rye. But there's no name, like it doesn't say Heaven Hill or Elijah Craig. Then it goes into one of our 70 rickhouses, depending on if it's the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, or seventh floor on the inside of the rickhouse to the outside of the rickhouse. And then we taste them after a certain amount of time, knowing where the institutional knowledge of knowing where the brands come from, putting about a 300 barrel dump in and then tasting it. And wonder and seeing, hey, does this need a little tweaking then? Is this in the taste profile for Heaven Hill Bottle and Bond? And that's how we do it. It's like a painter with a palette. So think of every barrel as a solid color on a painter's palette. And then when they're all mingled together, they make another color. And then our sensory team, which is headed up by Tawny Godey, she's been with our company for 34 years now. She and her team dial it in. So if it's off, think of Price is Right in the range game, right? If it's in that range, they go ahead and dump it, and because it's in there, it's in that range. But if it's slightly off, it doesn't become another product. They bring some more solid colors, more barrels in, either from the lower floor, middle floor, or higher floor, on their knowledge, that will bring that and put it into the range. And that's what makes it such a, you know, it's not really a factory then, even though we make a lot of bourbon, but there's a lot of personal touches and institutional knowledge and experience of people like Tawny Godey and her husband, Pat, who works over in the cistern room and part of warehousing, and who know how to put these, batches together.
It's both an art and a science at that point.
That's what makes it so much fun.
Do you have advice for people when they go to the liquor store? Because I find it's overwhelming. I mean, you've talked about the number of bottles, right? And I think so many people obviously have a price range. I'm looking for something in the $25 range, $50, $100. But like not counting that, just looking at labels and bottles, what guidance do you have? Do you go for things like bottled in bond? Or do you just, you know, grab a bottle, try it, and decide whether that's something you'd want to get again?
Great question. It's words on labels mean things. So knowing that bottle and bond are the rarest and most restricted spirits on planet Earth, that's a big statement, and I love saying it, but it's true. why wouldn't you take your hard-earned money and buy 4 or 5 bottle and bonds? Okay? So I'd suggest people, I work for Heaven Hill, so I'm going to throw out Heaven Hill products here. So if you went out and bought a Mellow Corn bottle and bond, corn whiskey, a Rittenhouse rye, bottle and bond rye whiskey, Evan Williams bottle and bond bourbon whiskey, there's 3 different styles of American whiskey that are the most restricted and rarest spirits on planet Earth that you can taste, and you haven't spent $50 yet. Okay? You've got 3 bottles. Now I can taste those and learn, do I like corn whiskey, bourbon whiskey, or rye whiskey? Do I not like one of them? Do I like one more than the other? Do I like all 3? I can go from there and branch out. Right now I can do some more experimenting, but I would also buy a Heaven Hill bottle and bond on top of that, because in those 4 whiskeys, because there's 3 different styles, look at how much we've just taught ourselves from a liquor store, right? So I'm not in it for $100 and I've got 4 of the rarest spirits on planet Earth. The Mellow Corn is a corn whiskey. It's in a used barrel. So most whiskeys of the world, single malts, Scotch whiskey, Irish whiskey, Canadian whiskey, Japanese whiskey, are all aged. 90% of it is aged in a once-used bourbon barrel. So now I've got an example of what a used barrel does has influence on a whiskey. Then if I taste bourbon, the Evan Williams bourbon after that, that's almost the same recipe, but one has a brand new barrel and one's in a used barrel. Now that brings that to life. What does the used barrel do and a brand new bourbon barrel do to the same recipe? I brought that to life. That's a lot in 2 bottles to taste, right? And then we taste the Rittenhouse rye, and it's also in a brand new barrel, but it's got 5 times the rye in it. It's got 51% rye. So wow, those 3 whiskeys alone. Then I go back and I revisit the Evan Williams Bottle and Bond, that's 4-year-old traditional bourbon whiskey, and Heaven Hill Bottle and Bond. Now that brings to life what 3 additional years does to the same exact whiskey. The bourbon whiskey in Evan Williams and the bourbon whiskey in Heaven Hill are the exact same. Exact same recipe, comes off the still the same, goes in the same number 3 charred barrel, goes in the same rick houses, but one's 3 years longer. So here's what a brand new charred barrel does, that from 4 years old to 7 years old. And then I can see, wow, I can, that really brings to life what 3 more years does. Then if I wanted to go buy a Henry McKenna, right? That's a 10-year-old, also the same whiskey. Now I've got those 5 different bourbons brings to life 4-year-old, 7-year-old, 10-year-old to the same exact whiskey. I can find where my sweet spot is. I can find if I like more oak, I can get that. But you know, if you like that lot of oak, it's kind of hard to get Henry McKenna. So that's where the 7-year-old bottle and bond comes in, because that's on the shelf almost every day. That's not an allocated item like Henry McKenna. And that's the power of this Heaven Hill bottle and bond. It's the rarest of the rare. It's got a lofty age statement on it too, but it's available every day. But those 5 whiskeys will really be my map to show me the next time I go into the liquor store and I see 300 bourbons, I've got a much better game plan than I had a week ago.
I think that sounds like a fun party game, is to just pick up those 5 and do a tasting with your buddies. That rye, I don't buy any other rye other than that. And I think, you know, it's easy to sometimes base your opinion on price. And I was just stunned, you know, because it's a reasonably priced rye. And you would think, oh, I guess I should probably, you know, if I want a good bottle, spend $50 and not $25. But I am 100% pleased with the Rittenhouse rye and rarely buy anything other than that. And I think that's an amazing one. I always have that in my liquor cabinet at home. And I want to kind of talk about pricing, because these days a lot of people talk about certain
elusive bottles, right? You had said something about like the $3,000 bottle. People are paying, you know, $900 for bottles. Is this all nonsense and signaling and flexing and saying, I have this bottle? Because in blind tastings, these pricier bottles don't necessarily perform or rank better if you go to a spirits competition. So is it all nonsense and just kind of say, I got this bottle of this thing that nobody else has?
You know, like everything else, there's not one answer to that.
Sure.
You know, of course there's a lot of flexing. Of course, you know, if you're going to say I've got every Parker's that's ever made, or I've got every decanter of Old Fitzgerald, and there's other unicorns and other distilleries that people go nuts over, you know, Pappy Van Winkle and Blanton's and all this stuff. And a lot of it is flexing, like, hey, I've got, look what I've got. You know, my thing is, I'm like, look at all these bourbons that you overlooked that I've got that you don't have that are so good, right? So I mentioned like those allocate, those unicorns, that's gold dust. And everybody wants to grab gold dust, right? And I say, if you should always grab gold dust when you see it. But you're stepping on bricks of gold to reach the gold dust. So pick up the brick of gold, pick up the Rittenhouse Rye Bottle and Bond, pick up the Heaven Hill Bottle and Bond, and put that in your cart too, because the bricks are worth more than the dust.
I'll try some of the gold dust on someone else's dime. One of the things that I've been fortunate enough as a personal chef is like, I go to people's houses and quite often they want to break out some of these bottles. I did a party around Christmas time where this man, I mean, he had a whole whiskey room in his basement and he had easily 20 bottles alone of everything from the Van Winkle line, right? And was just like, what do you guys want to drink tonight? And it was like opening bottles. It's like, if you're opening a bottle of some Pappy that I've never had, I'll sure take some of that. So, you know, spoils of war, whatever you want to call that. Well, talking about consuming straight bourbon, you know, we'll maybe talk about cocktails a little bit. How do you decide whether you're going to drink it neat, maybe do an ice cube or a few drops of water? Is it personal preference or is there a way to kind of decide how to best consume something? And maybe thinking about like the Heaven Hill Bottled and Bond in particular, is there a best way to try that or try all three and see what works best for you?
Well, that's with cocktails, Bottle and Bond is kind of the go-to of a cocktail bar. Go to any cocktail bar in your city, and they will be pouring cocktails from 100 proof Bottle and Bond, because being at the lowest a bourbon can be is 80 proof. A Bottle and Bond must be 100 proof. So that higher proof will stand up. If I'm making a rye Manhattan and a bourbon Manhattan, and they're both 80 proof or 86 proof or 90 proof, they're both made with rye, barley, and corn. Right? Rye bourbon and bourbon whiskeys, same three grains. Well, because it's a lower proof, and then I add the sweet vermouth into each one, I add ice and then stir it, which becomes water and waters it down. That's part of the cocktail. And put the couple dashes of bitters in. The nuances of a bourbon and rye might go away, and I might not be able to tell the bourbon Manhattan from the rye Manhattan. But if I make one with Rittenhouse Bottle and Bond and one with Evan Williams Bottle and Bond, the rye and bourbon, and that 100 proof stands up and it raises its hand and says, hey, I'm the rye Manhattan and I'm the bourbon Manhattan. So that's the advantage of Bottle and Bond, is you can really tell the difference in the cocktails of what you prefer and which style of whiskey you want it in. And the 100 proof, which happens to be a proof gallon, which is what we pay to the government. It always comes down to money to the government, right? That's why the 100 proof was chosen. But it works out really good for cocktails, but it also works out good drinking something neat. So it's not barrel proof. It's at 100 proof, which is still a good, you know, sizable, nice proof that I can taste. And if it still's too strong, which you make the face, right? You make the wincy face, right? That's going to be too strong. Add a little bit of water and find where you like it.
Experimentation.
Right. You know, that's the fun. That's having people over, and let's experiment. It's going to be different for each person too. So just because you like it at 100 proof and I like a little water in it doesn't mean you're right or I'm wrong.
I do think that's where a little whiskey snobbery comes in. You know, people want you to try things neat first. And I'm not opposed to that, but quite often they'll say, oh, this is a good bourbon. Don't add water to it or don't add ice to it. But I find that a little opens it up sometimes in ways that are beneficial to the spirit.
Absolutely. Drink it how you like it, but know why you like it.
Do you see any trends? Like, do you follow trends, and are there trends in bourbon right now or things that you're kind of paying attention to that are maybe evolving?
Oh, sure. There's been lots of trends. You know, when I started, there wasn't much bottle and bond around. It took years and years and years of being Johnny Appleseed of the bottle and bond world to spread the love. And now a lot of people are becoming more and more of a thing, but it's hard to achieve. So there's still not many out there, but there are 10 times more bottle and bonds out than there were when I started. When I started too, people didn't want anything that was too strong. Well, we have a product called Fighting Cock Bourbon. It's 103 proof. And people go, oh, wow, 103. It's only 3 more points over a bottle and bond. And they make it sound, oh, my God. Even bottle and bond back then, 100 proof. Oh, my gosh. Now, you know, look at all the barrel proofs that people gravitated towards. When I was at Jim Beam, they were one of the first to come out with a distiller's masterpiece, which was finished in a cognac or a sherry barrel. And look at the finishes that have come out and all the toasted barrels that have come out. Those are trends that are still around and being done. But I think it's bottle and bond's time. And I think with Heaven Hill Bottle and Bond coming out right now and being a national product with a 7-year age statement, I think that's really turning heads and really... I think it's the next thing. I told some distillers, you know, they are like, oh, that's just that's from a bygone era when the treasury agents used to live on the distilleries. It's not even anything anymore. But I'm telling them, hey, bottle and bond is like water coming in your basement, right? You can put towels down, but the damn floor is going to get wet. So you better be either going to be with it or you're going to be washed away in it. You know, you're going to be behind the curve.
Well, besides being a stand-up comedian, is there any advice you have for people who maybe want to break into the spirits industry and do something similar to what you're doing?
You go to every event you can. You go to every distillery event. If there's one particular distillery you like, go to every single tasting they do. Go to every event that they put on. Talk to the people who work at the distillery and the distributors that represent the distilleries and say, hey, I love this. One day I'd like to get into the industry. And if you're known to going, you know, gosh, Chris comes to every single thing we do. You know, we're now looking for an ambassador. We're now looking for somebody to be on the sensory team or whatever. But you know, Chris, he's at everything we do. He's at everything. Oh my gosh, you're on a short list all of a sudden. And then after you're on a short list, it's up to you to get the interview. But, you know, you just want to get on a short list of 3 to 5 people that they're thinking of. And that's a way to stay top of mind to people.
All right. That's great advice. Well, is there anything you want to leave our listeners with today before we get out of here?
Well, this bottle and bond, it's, you know, I still want to have resonate that it is the most restricted and rarest spirits on planet Earth. So why wouldn't you want every single one? And with only a handful that have an over 4-year age statement, with Heaven Hill Bottle and Bomb at $50 a bottle, that is not overwhelming. And that is something I can put into my everyday sipping neat, enjoying in a cocktail kind of experience. And then after that, you can branch out after that. But that's how, I think that's the power of Heaven Hill Bottle and Bomb, and having our name on the label is something we're really proud of, you know, on a national platform.
And I definitely think I need to go pick up a couple other bottles and do one of those side-by-side tastings. I do think that's a really great idea. And again, the price point on all of these bottles makes it very reasonable that you could pick them all up for, you know, $100 or so, give or take, for like 5 bottles.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks so much for coming on the show. It's been great having you today.
Chris, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. And I always love talking about bottle and bond.
And to all of our listeners, this has been Chris with Chefs Without Restaurants. Thanks so much for listening and have a great week.
Over the past 30 years, the world of the personal chef has grown in importance to fulfill dining needs. While the pandemic certainly upended the restaurant experience, it allowed personal chefs to close that dining gap. Central to all of that is the United States Personal Chef Association. Representing nearly 1,000 chefs around the U.S. and Canada, USPCA provides a strategic backbone for those chefs, including liability insurance, training, communications, certification, and more. It's a reassurance to consumers that the chef coming into their home is prepared to offer them an experience with their meal. USPCA provides training to become a personal chef through our preparatory membership. Looking to showcase your products or services to our chefs and their clients? Partnership opportunities are available. And there's a new member special on all membership levels. Save $25 to $75 by using promo code SPRING2024. Special veteran pricing and payment plans are available. Call Angela today at 1-800-995-2138, extension 705, or email her at aprather@uspca.com for membership and partner info.
You're still here? The podcast's over. If you are indeed still here, thanks for taking the time to listen to the show. I'd love to direct you to one place, and that's chefswithoutrestaurants.org. From there, you'll be able to join our email newsletter, get connected in our free Facebook group, and join our personal chef, catering, and food truck database so I can help get you more job leads. And you'll also find a link to our sponsor page where you'll find products and services I love. You pay nothing additional to use these links, but I may get a small commission, which helps keep the Chefs Without Restaurants podcast and organization running. You might even get a discount for using some of these links. As always, you can reach out to me on Instagram at Chefs Without Restaurants or send me an email at chefswithoutrestaurants@gmail.com. Thanks so much.